Jesus told his disciples, "There was a rich man whose manager was accused of wasting his possessions. So he called him in and asked him, 'What is this I hear about you? Give an account of your management, because you cannot be my manager any longer.' The manager said to himself, 'What shall I do now? My master's taking away my job. I'm not strong enough to dig.'" He's going to go dig ditches, I guess. And "I'm too ashamed to beg. I know what I'll do so that when I lose my job here, people will welcome me into their houses." So he called each one of his master's debtors, and he asked the first, "How much do you owe my master?" 900 gallons of olive oil," he replied. The manager told him, "Take your bill. Shh, sit down quickly. Make it 450. I like how he makes them do the dirty work, right? Like, then he asked the second, "And how much do you owe?" 1,000 bushels of wheat," he replied. He told him, "Take your bill and make it 800. The master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. "For the people of this world, the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of light." That would be y'all. I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourself so that when it is gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings." I've actually preached on this passage before here. I have preached on it several times throughout my ministry. And one of the things that blows me away about this passage is how quickly we all sit there and just go, because it is shocking. It should be jarring. Can I explain to you why this passage should be jarring to you? Let's imagine that you're living in Jesus' day and age, and he's walking along a dusty road, and he stops to tell this story. Or let's imagine that you've come into a synagogue, and you've got your family that you guys were arguing and fighting on your walk to church. I'm sure they did, right? Like, just like you do in your car. Like, they've argued, and they fought, and they get there. They're at the synagogue, and they come in, and everything happens. They sit down, and Jesus starts to teach, and when he does, he shares this parable. Or maybe you're at somebody's house for like a dinner and he starts to share this parable, but whatever it is, whatever the setting is, you're sitting there and you're listening and he starts to talk about that one guy at work that y'all work with, right? The one that's lazy, that shows up like late and leaves early. You ever worked with that person? Yeah. And you're like, they just slide by, they just skim over the surface, and somehow those people get promoted sometimes and your blood just is boiling, right? Have you ever seen somebody get promoted because the boss didn't want to have to deal with it, right? And they're like, just like these situations, and you as the, so you hear Jesus telling the story. This guy has been stealing money. This guy has been embezzling. This guy has been wasting money. He's just been taking people out to eat on the company's dime, and he's not producing anything. And what happens? The boss brings him in and he says, your day is coming, buddy. Like, you pack your bags. You've only got a few more weeks, so we don't know how exactly that all took place. And you know, if you're the person listening to this, because you've never heard it before, see, maybe the problem is that you've heard these stories so much, like they don't have the same oomph that they would have had to the original audience. Because they hear it, and you could just feel them, because they were in a culture where most people were poor, they weren't wealthy, there was kind of hand to mouth, and so they're hearing about this rich guy who's gonna get it, and nobody loves anything better than a story about a rich guy gonna get it, right? And so they're leaning in, they're waiting for it, because they know the axe is gonna come. Then he starts to do like these incredulous things, like he's calling people in, he's like, "How much do you owe? All right, really quick, just write it. Do half, just say it's half." And then the other guy, just take off 150 bushels. And he's giving away more of the master's money. And you're like, oh, dude, you are so going to get it at the end of the story, right? Because he's the bad guy in the story. And then this is what Jesus does at the end of the parable. At the end of the parable, Jesus flips the script on us. He takes all of your expectations. Jesus was a master at this. It's incredible to me how often we miss this, because you're so used to the stories and you've heard them so many times that you're not reading them like it's the first time reading it. And Jesus flips the script on us. And what he says is, you have something to learn from this guy. Did you pick up on it? He says, you have something to learn from this guy. Listen to this. This is what he says. He says, the master commended. Like, weren't you expecting him to say the master condemned? Isn't that the word choice Jesus should have used? That commend, like commendation, like you gave him accolades, you gave him awards for being devious. And this is what we call, I don't know if you use this in your family, but in my family, we call you a weasel if you're like that, right? Like that dude's a weasel. My brother always claims I'm a weasel when I play Monopoly. He's the weasel, all right? And it's on tape now, so sorry, Chip. He's the weasel, not me. The master commends him. He commends him. He tells him, good job. Why? Because he had acted shrewdly. You got one over on me, pal. You did good this time. Listen to what Jesus says about this. So what does Jesus say? He says, for the people of this world, like the people that you work with every day, the people who you shop with, the people who are buying a car from you and the guy who's selling the car to you, the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of light. They're more shrewd. They're more cunning. They know how to get the best out of a deal, don't they? Listen to this. This is how I put it. Is this way. The people of this world know how to use what they have to get what they want. Isn't that true? Like people in this world know how to, they'll manipulate you. They'll use their money and their wealth and their power. They'll use their status. I used to work at a car dealership for a time period in the marketing department. And one of the interesting things was I started to learn about car dealerships. And one of the things the boss said is he said, in a lot of dealerships, you'll go in and the finance guy is actually in a high, like a big chair behind a really big desk. And they'll put you in a short chair in front of him. Why? It's because they want to have all the power in the relationship so they can force you into things that you're not ready for, right? Like that's kind of the old, it's because people in this world know how to use what they have to get what they want. I used to be a youth pastor years ago. It was like my all-time favorite job in the world. It was incredible. Like, are you kidding? I would sometimes fill Twinkies with mustard and make kids eat it. Like, it doesn't get any better than that, right? Like, we used to take water balloon slingshots, and I would buy a bunch of bean burritos at Taco Bell and give kids trash can lids and shoot them at them. Like, who gets paid for doing that, right? Like, isn't that like the coolest thing you've ever heard of? It was just an incredible job. So one of the things that I would do, though, is that I would buy kids off for coming to church. If I'm just going to be blatantly honest with you, at one point we put up a pool on our church lawn, like a big pool that you'd buy at Walmart or someplace. We filled it up. We brought in like fire trucks and like all kinds of, we had a huge water night. Like kids went crazy. Hundreds and hundreds of kids came in. And at the end, the whole thing was you could win a pool at this thing. So at the end, there was this little girl who won the pool and she got to take it home. And like, it was incredible. Like kids would come all over the place. But I would have, never failed. Whenever I did something like that, I'd have some really well-meaning Christian come up and say, Kent, now you know, don't you, brother, that you're just using money to buy those kids and get them to come to church. And I'd be like, uh-huh. And then they'd be like, but you do know that what you win them with is what you keep them with. And I'd be like, I don't think so, lady. Like, because what they were saying, have you ever heard that? What you win them with is what you keep them with? What they mean by that is you gave away a pool this week. Next week, it's going to have to be an in-ground pool. The week after that, it's going to have to be like a lifetime's worth of going to a water park and that they can always get in for free. Because what you won with them with, what they came to church for, was to win a pool. And so if that's the motive behind them coming, then you're going to have to continue to up that to keep their interest. And I the problem for me with that line of logic was this. I was giving them something so much better than a pool, right? Because I was giving them the message of Jesus and the hope of a changed life and a forever changed life. I was giving them the hope of eternity with God and having a relationship restored to him. I was giving them the hope of peace and of joy and of just complete, utter forgiveness. I was giving them all of that. And that's a billion times better than any water park, a billion times better than any pool. And I thought, you don't get it. I'm just using the pool because that's the way the people of this world think. We like stuff. Listen, I want you to hear. I know some of you have heard this kind of the sermon before, a little bit of it. I want you to hear. Jesus has just said, right? The people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind. They know how to get what they want with what they have. Then he says this. This is his point as he's pointing your eyes to something in this parable. He says, I tell you, these are Jesus's words. I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends. Did you hear that? Jesus just said, buy people. Use your worldly wealth to gain friends for yourselves. So that when it's gone, You will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Use your wealth to buy friends, so when it's gone, you'll be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Jesus is saying, use your wealth to buy people for the kingdom of God. I used to be, did any of you do drama in high school? Anybody in here do that? I did drama. I was in plays and stuff. For some reason, I always got, I'd always get picked to be the fat guy smoking a cigar. Like, every single play. So it was awesome. I'd be like walking around the school with a cigar. I think that's totally illegal, but I would be like walking around with a cigar. Hey, what's up? Like, you know, I'd practice it. But typically, I'm going to tell you this, the guy who's fat and has a cigar in the play is usually the rich guy, right? Like, I'm usually the rich, like, senator or whatever. And I'm like, hey, how you doing, right? And I'm like walking around with a cigar. And like, you guys are picturing it, aren't you? it was a blast, but they're usually the rich guy. And what's crazy is when I was on that stage, you're not going to believe this, but everybody treated me like I was the rich guy. I would walk on and they'd be like, oh, Senator, oh, hello. And I'd be like, well, hello, my constituents, right? And like, we'd have conversation. I promise it's not going to go any further than that, right? We would have these conversations and we would talk and it was like I was actually rich. But do you know what? It was just a play. Wasn't real. Can I tell you something that Jesus knows about this world that maybe you don't know? You can take that slide off. We'll do that later. Can I tell you something that maybe you don't know? It's that this world that you're living in, it's just a play. You are just on a stage right now, people. All the money, all the wealth, all the success, all the things that you've built up for yourself that makes you think you're something because of your money, if you think that, it's just a play. Because one day, I promise you this, I do lots of this. One day, you're going to be in a box next to me, not breathing. And there's going to be a lot of sad people coming up to talk to me. And you know what they're going to want to talk about? Not how much money you didn't take with you. They're going to talk about how much they miss you, or how they wished you had made different choices in life. How much they wish they had a better relationship with you. Your money? I don't care. It is an empty hole. Like, have you ever, I had a guy that I worked for at one point because I used to be pretty lazy when I was a teenager, and he said, Kent, if I could, I'd just make you go dig a hole, and then I'd make you fill that hole in and dig another hole. I was like, what are you trying to say right now? I got the point. I try to work hard now, but that's what he wanted to do, dig a hole and dig another. Do you know what it's like to do something that's just worthless, that is meaningless, has no value? Because when you pour yourself into making money and becoming as worldly wealthy as you possibly can, all for the end of you just having success, all for the end of you just having some kind of fame, all for the end of you just having power, it's empty. It is empty. It is, you literally, folks, are living on the stage of a play. And this is the brilliance of Jesus. He knows it's just toy money that he's put in your hand. But nobody around you knows it's toy money. Nobody does. Ask your boss. Tell him you're going to light a $10 bill on fire and see if anybody wants to come watch. They'll be like, just give it to me. Don't do it. You're like, you can be like, you do that every 4th of July. No, don't do that, all right? They think it's real. There's a huge chance that you think it's real. That you think that money actually does something for you. It is useful in our world. I'm not saying money's not useful. This is what Jesus' whole point. He says, I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain what for yourselves? What? What? Buy people off. Use your worldly wealth to make friends. Listen, he tells his followers, this is what he's saying, to use the temporary wealth that the world values to buy friends so that when you get to heaven, it will be packed full of the people you influenced for the kingdom. See, this is the deal. This is why the one thing that you can take with you to heaven is not money. The one thing you can take with you to heaven is the person sitting next to you. Look at them real quick. Look at them. Look at them. You can take that person with you. And there are people all throughout. You should, when you walk in here, you should see any empty seats around you. Anybody got an empty seat? You should be looking at those empty seats and start praying about the person who God wants to fill that seat with, because it might be one of your coworkers. What if you could bring them to heaven with you? What if when you walked in, the place just erupted because there was just a sea of people whose lives have been transformed because you stopped viewing this world as an end unto itself, and you started to see it as a resource for the end, to change people's lives? Listen, this isn't about you having more friends, people. Jesus isn't so concerned about you being lonely. I mean, he is. That's why he gives himself, right? But this isn't about you having a lot of friends. It is about more friends having what you have. Like, don't you want them to have that? Don't you? Can I just tell you a secret? Even the most annoying person at work, if they can get Jesus, it could start to transform them from the inside out. Like, it can change. He changes everything. So I want to tell you, this is why, if you ask me why we did this Chosen party last week where you came and we partnered with World Vision, you know, they got up here and talked, and so many of you went out in the lobby and you took your pictures. Wasn't that fun? And like, you're like, hey, and they took your picture, and then Robbie backpacked all those to Africa. The reason we do that here, it's because we want to be the kind of church who is just shockingly generous. Because we recognize all of this stuff, it's just temporary. Do you know what? We could do church without the lights, without the fog. Some of you are like, please, without the fog machine. No, but without the sound system, without the screens, we could do it without air conditioning. Some of you are like, I draw a line at air conditioning. We could do it without all of that. Do you know why? Because Jesus doesn't need it. He doesn't need it. We use all this stuff, and I'm hyper aware that we use it only for a means of seeing somebody be transformed by the gospel message of Jesus Christ. And so we are the shockingly generous church. It's actually one of the values that our staff holds. We want to be shockingly generous. My hope is that there are times where you go, why are we doing this, Kent? I don't get it. And I can be like, because our God is shockingly generous, and we want to be shockingly generous just like he is, right? I'll tell you, I just came into the office this morning, and there was this graph. Do you guys get graphs at your work? I'm a pastor, so I don't understand them at all, unless they're like just straight, like I need lines. Like, so I come in, and there's graph. David, our executive, knows I need straight lines. So he's got all the data points, but then it shows the trend line, right? And the trend line for Harmony is like from here, and it's just going up and to the right. For you, that would be that direction, right? And the trend line is going up and to the right, and I was like, man, this is good. And I look at what it is, and it's the attendance of Harmony. Because the week before I came, Harmony had about 120 people for the entire Sunday morning. Did you know that? Like, this week, I'm guessing we're gonna be close to 400. There's probably more than 120 in this room easily. Yeah, yeah. This is the point. This isn't to like brag and pat ourselves on the back. This is the point of it, all right? It's that y'all are new here. I'm new. Did you know I've only been here for 2 years? Like, what a joy to be able to get in on the ground floor of something and create a culture that's shockingly generous. Like, when you partner with that, you literally right now have the ability to influence and to make a difference and to see lives change. And when you see somebody get baptized, to be like, I was part of that. When you give to help some child in Kenya, Africa, and you get a video someday of them pumping water, however it comes out, and they're drinking clean water, and everybody's dancing and singing and celebrating, you were part of that. Don't you want someday when you get to heaven for Jesus to go, I'm so thankful you got that all that was just play money. And I'd given it to you because I knew you could do something impressive with it. I knew you, and I knew you could do it. He knows you. He gave it to you. I'll just tell you a secret. You did not have to be born in the United States of America. You didn't. So it is pretty arrogant to think all that money is just yours and you get to use it for whatever you want. I promise you this. He's put it in your pocket. Because he knows deep down what you can be. You can be shockingly generous. I wanted to end this sermon by inviting Robbie up here, our student ministry pastor. Robbie, where you at, pal? You in here somewhere? I hope he's in here. There he is. All right. I'm inviting Robbie up because I want you guys, with the remainder of this sermon time, you're lucky I didn't go over today. I went under. And invite Robbie if you want to take a seat. Mm-hmm. And I want to interview him because I want for you to hear, it's good for us to talk about being shockingly generous. It's another thing that you guys practiced that last week and to get to hear some of like what came out of that. So I'm just, are you guys okay with me just having a conversation with Robbie and you listening in? All right. So yeah, welcome. Everybody give it up for Robbie. I'm assuming you smell good now, right? I'm not.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
I'm not going to check, just saying. So here's, I would like, if you could brush and kind of like big paint stroke, like brush strokes, is that the right word? Paint strokes? Man, I'm such a dork. If you could paint in some big brush strokes, like the experience kind of getting to Kenya, all that kind of stuff, help us, like bring us into your trip a little bit.
Yeah. So I kind of intentionally tried to go in pretty blind just so I had like a bit of experience, didn't really know what to expect.
Ignorance is always the best policy.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. And I the plane ride was, it was both directions. It was like 24 hours of just straight travel, plane ride, sitting in terminals, so not fun. And I didn't really know what to expect when I got to Africa. Like my only experience with Africa is like the Lion King, which not quite a faithful rendition of what it's like.
You didn't hold any babies.
No, I didn't. Yeah, no. Okay. I was wondering, like, and I think I mentioned this, like, am I going to see any like animals while we're there? I'm like, no, certainly not. Like, that's not like some like crazy sort of like thing when visitors visit Africa. They think like animals are everywhere. Well, actually, on one of our trips, we were driving somewhere and one of the state parks or national parks was right there, and I saw zebras and an ostrich and rhinos, and so I actually did see some animals. But my kind of first impressions of Africa is you get into, or Kenya, you get into Nairobi, the capital of Kenya, and it's like really built up. Like, you know, they have like big airport, and there's like big buildings there, high rises. It looks, I mean, in a kind of like, you know, Lexington would look. Just, you know, not as affluent, of course, but it's big, you know, and it's all built up. And then as you go away from Nairobi, there's literally this, like, it was almost about a mile of just, like, kind of with what I would call a slum. They have a different word for it. But it's just, like, these sort of buildings that are just made out of sheet metal, kind of cobbled all together where people live. Who can't afford to live in the city.
Is that like families or is that?
Oh, yeah. So like families live there, children and adults and mothers and fathers. They raise their kids there. It's not terribly safe or anything like that, of course. And they kind of live in these sort of slums there. The general family dynamic in Kenya, though, is that like parents, the mother and children, they will live at home like, usually out in, and this is kind of the romantic, makes it feel more romantic than it is, but the countryside. They'll live out there, and these are just buildings that are kind of like concrete buildings with metal roofs and stuff that are really sparse. And then the fathers will work in the cities because that's where the jobs are. They can't afford for their families to live in the city, but they go and they work in the city for a couple weeks at a time, and they send their paychecks back home to their family. As you go out from like the slums, you get into what is kind of like the countryside, and it's very sparsely populated. There's little population centers every so often, but it is very much like wilderness. They have a lot of people have cell phones though, and they're able to kind of contact each other and stay in touch in a rudimentary way, and that's like one of their biggest sort of benefits that helps them out a lot. And there is electricity in many places, but that's it, and it's. Yeah.
So let me ask you a question that there may be people who are wondering this. I know I for sure had this when we first started talking to World Vision was it's great to like help one of these, like join with one of these organizations and partner with them. But the reality is there's always the question, like, is the money getting to the kids? Are there like, how does all that work? One of the things I wanted to hear from you is, do you feel like after, because you got to spend a week with World Vision, right? Like, and you, it wasn't like they were putting on a show for you. And so I would love to hear from you. Do you feel like after being there, like, did it help you feel more trustworthy with the organization, less? I would tell you guys, one of the things I found out last week was that when you sponsor a child and you, every dollar that you give, because World Vision gets a lot of in-kind donations, maybe a Costco or somebody like that donates to them, that from these corporations, that for every dollar you spend, I think it's like $1.15 actually gets put into the system, like for your child. So like, it's actually beyond the money that you put in makes a difference. But I'd love to hear from you, kind of like tell us what it's really like.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, you know?
No, yeah. I mean, I'm pretty skeptical by nature. And I know there are a lot of mission organizations out there, and I don't want to badmouth anyone or cast any dispersions, but there's a lot of mission organizations out there that are doing good, but they could be doing a whole lot better. And I kind of walked in, I didn't know much about World Vision, and I made it pretty clear with the leader of our trip there at the end of the trip. I said, you know, I came in here trying to find, I wanted to find something I didn't like, and I couldn't do it. Everything they did was so above board, like it was incredible, and it really what made me feel really comfortable as a leader of this church that we are partnering with them. I mean, one of the big things for me was we went and we visited their headquarters in Kenya and like over all of Kenya, their headquarters there. And we met with their executive team. Like the guy who is in charge of all their work in Kenya came and visited us, and he is a national of Kenya. He lives there. He's a Kenyan. You know, and same with all their other directors. Every single person that I met with who worked for World Vision Kenya lives in Kenya. They are Kenyan. I didn't meet some white dude named Joe who moved from California to help run their whatever. Like, and that was extremely important for me, and that was really awesome to see that they are so invested in the communities there that they hire people from Kenya to run all this stuff. The average wage or average yearly wage for someone who's middle class in Kenya is 50,000 shillings. Which is about...
That's a lot, right?
It's $500. That's it. That's all they live off of. $500 a year is middle class in Kenya, which really kind of emphasizes what your money is going to. And they've been very extremely transparent when we were there about how they do things, all their policies and everything. I didn't meet any dude who drove a Ferrari in the middle of Nairobi. Wasn't anything like that. They're all very passionate about, first and foremost, keeping children safe and loving them and building their communities. Big thing was that they're very clear about the $40 that you send a month. 75% of that goes directly to the child and their family. So like that money goes directly to them. They get food and clothing, and they pay for their tuition for school and everything. And the other 10% actually goes into their community. Mm. And the reason for that is like, it doesn't matter if your kid has clothes and goes to school, if their school is a dump and they don't have clean water and that sort of stuff, you know? So they want to also, they're investing in the communities their children are in too, and making sure that their entire community, it's a holistic approach to building stuff up. So yeah, I mean, I tried, but they're above board in almost every way I could possibly imagine. And and I think I got all of that right. We actually have a representative, Josh, is here. And,
hi, Josh.
He could say, he could probably correct me if I got any of that wrong. But yeah, no, I'm extremely impressed with
it. Yeah, that's awesome. So I want to ask you the question we all really want to know is, tell us about the kids. Like, I would love to hear from you, like, about the choosing party for those kids and... like, what was something that kind of put a smile on your face that you couldn't get rid of? And maybe something what really touched your heart, maybe made you almost want to cry kind of thing. Like, what's something, kind of where do you in those two dynamics?
Yeah.
Paint that picture for us, because we didn't get to go.
So one of the big things with World Vision and what they really emphasized was building a relationship between their sponsors and their kids. Yeah. And I want you to understand that. Like, you're not just sending money to these kids and that's it. You know, they want you to have a relationship with these children.
Yeah.
'Cause these kids just, they love being able to kind of have this sort of relationship with their sponsors. One of the first things we did when we got there, the second day we were there, we went, this was even before the Chosen party, we went and the people who were on our trip who already sponsor kids got to see their kids in person. And that was just an incredible moment. Like, I didn't get to do anything because I didn't have a kid already. So I just kind of walked around and watched everyone else. But seeing them interact with their kids and hugging them. They got to meet their family and their parents and talking to them. And I mean, it was like they knew who these people were. Like, they had this relationship with them. Like, we even had our videographer who was like recording this whole trip, sponsors a kid, and got to meet her kid too, and gave her a Polaroid instant camera and a bunch of film. And she burned through all that film, taking pictures and everything. There's another one. It was just a single father and his daughter. The mother, for some reason, wasn't there. And there was a young woman who sponsored that child. And she really was talking to the girl's dad. And he said, you know, it's almost like you're her mother and like we're co-parenting her together and stuff. And
that's cool.
He gave her a hug. And in their culture, when a man hugs a woman, the man just kind of melts. He just kind of goes limp and the woman holds him up. And so she was able to do that and stuff. It was really touching seeing all of that. But then, of course, we get to the good stuff. We get to the chosen party. They actually did 2 days full of it because, including the 73 that we did, then in total we had like 450 children who got chosen on the trip.
Wow.
Or got to choose someone on the trip, which was incredible. So we got there and we pulled up and they were like tents, like a circus. Like they were tents set up. It was really colorful and there was music going and everyone was excited. The energy in the air, you could feel it. And we got there and we saw the kids there. A lot of them had their parents with them and they were just so excited to be there and meet us and stuff like that.
That's cool.
Like they had this whole process and of course they pull them over and there was the one tent where, you know, like it happens where they choose and they were bringing groups of kids up to the tent and I got to see all the pictures are hanging up there and I saw some familiar faces hanging up on those pictures and stuff.
Were you like, I know them.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, hey, look at that, you know. And they brought the kids over and they sort of lined them up, gave them some instruction. And you could see the kids were kind of like pointing and picking who they were going to pick. And then they said, go. And they'd run up and grab the little pictures off the lines. And they were like, squeeze them and turn around and show their friends and take pictures with them. And oh, that was incredible. And then, of course, they had a separate tent off on the other side where they put the pictures of the people on the trip who are going to get chosen. And I kind of went over there and looked at it, and I saw like my picture hanging up, which was really intense and stuff, got really nervous. And they told us to go away, you know, and shoot us away, and they brought a bunch of kids over there, and I was kind of like trying to look and see like who's going to pick us. And then they picked all the photos, and we went over there, and I got to meet my child. It's Mibete, was her name. And she's 9 years old. And love soccer and stuff. And I got to meet her and talk to her. She didn't speak a lot of English, but that's okay, you know, and got to play some soccer together and stuff like that. And it was just, it was incredible. Like that stuck with me. But the thing that kept me smiling the whole trip was just how grateful these people are and how much they just love us and they haven't even met us, you know. Like we would, the way we knew when we were going somewhere that we were like close or we got there was that there was a group of people there singing. Like, every time we got to the place where the borehole project for the water was, there was a group who was singing and dancing when we got there, and they were like so excited to meet us. We went to schools, and the school children had all these songs ready, and they were singing and dancing about how happy they were to see us. And I mean, they are just so excited that we're there, and they were so excited about everything that World Vision is doing. And it was just, these people just are crazy about it. And so it was, that was awesome. It was like really incredible.
Cool. That's really cool. So we just have a few more minutes left. I would like, I have two things. One, I'd like to hear like if there's one big takeaway that maybe you think would be good for us to hear. I'd love to hear that. And then second, I'd love for you to share if anybody wants to hear more about your trip, how they can do that. Like,
So the big takeaway for me, at least, what really left an impact on me was one of the days we got to meet with the pastors there. World Vision does a lot of work with the local churches and pastors in the communities that they work with. And that's one of the things, at least the leader on our trip, I was talking to him about. And he says a lot of times when people talk to him and ask him about work, they go, yeah, so you know, you do water and you give people food and clothes and all that stuff. He says, that's cool, but what else do you do? And that's really code for, do you tell them about Jesus? And I put this in one of my videos, but like Kenya is 85% Christian. They don't need me to travel all the way from the U.S. to tell them about who Jesus is. They know. Like
America is about 30% for
So just they're killing it over there. They probably need to come tell us who Jesus is. All right, like these people got it down. And like, you know, and it's really kind of comes from a special place of arrogance to think that us white people need to drive over there to Kenya and let me tell you about who Jesus. They know, okay? Their local churches are doing an exceptional job reaching their communities about who Christ is and spreading the love of Jesus. What they need from us is partnership. You know, we have resources that they don't have. And just seeing how excited and on fire their pastors are about spreading the gospel and how World Vision partners with them was just incredible. There was a part right in the last day when we were leaving the field office and we were supposed to meet with the pastors one last time to kind of pray and talk about our churches and stuff. And I heard like this music playing and I was like, wow, that's really cool. That sounds like, but it was really loud. And I was like, I wonder where that's coming from. I thought it was like a party or something. And as we were walking, it got louder and louder and it turned out it was at the church we were going to. right? It was so loud. I mean, they had a sound system in there from like the 80s, but they were killing it. It was so, I mean, you guys thought like worshiping here is loud. My ears were ringing. Like it was that incredibly loud in there, and they brought the roof off that place. Like we were dancing and clapping and singing about Jesus and stuff like I'd never done before. And then the pastor gave up and gave a sermon that was incredible. It was really good. And it's just this building. Like it's not even as big as this room we're in. And it has like a metal roof and little light bulbs hanging from the ceiling and stuff. And this sound system, like, did it sound good? No, but it was beautiful. And they were incredible. And they had such a passion for it. And the church is just so alive in that place. And it really is a testament to the church worldwide that, you know, that you don't need any of this stuff. Like, we complain about the drums being loud, or we complain about the sound system being buzzing or something. We complain about this or that. Like, they don't even have, like, running water in this building.
Yeah.
And they're just having an amazing time, and seeing the Spirit move like that was, I mean, that was really encouraging to me, that these people, and we got together and we prayed, and I prayed for them and what they needed, and they're like, you know, we're building, we just pray for that, and we pray for this, and then they asked what they could pray about for us. So I talked about what our church is doing, and I want you to pray for these things. And so we prayed for one another. I think if I could ask you guys to do anything, you're already, like, if you sponsor a child, that's incredible. If you don't yet, please consider still doing it. You can still sponsor a child. It's not too late to do that. But also, if you could pray for rain. Kenya hasn't had rain in 3 years. It is incredibly just horrible, the drought there. There's people like literally dying of hunger and thirst because there's no rain. I think the World Vision, leader of World Vision, went to Kenya a couple years ago, and there's like pictures of them standing in fields just full of dead livestock that are just have died from dehydration.
Wow.
So they definitely need rain very, very badly. That's what they even asked me to pray about. So I told him I would tell you guys that our church would be praying for rain for Kenya. But it was incredible just to see. I think what I used first service to say is the light and the darkness.
Yeah.
And what World Vision is doing and what we're doing through World Vision in their church, it is this place of just seems like there's just hopelessness and there's a lot of pain. And the light of the gospel is moving in that place. And the light of Jesus Christ is moving because of what we're doing in partnership with World Vision and other churches everywhere. It is the church.
Yeah.
If you want to know more about my trip, you can come back here tonight from 7 to 8. We will have Reach service tonight. It's just service is going to be like in here, and I'm going to talk about my trip and everything that happened. Fortunately, won't have childcare because it's a little short notice. But your kids are more than welcome to come in here and sit in it as well, and that doesn't bother me at all. And you can hear more about my trip. I'll share videos and pictures and talk all about it because it was really incredible.
Yeah, that's awesome. Will you guys give it up for Robbie? Thank you, Robbie. Talk about it, yeah.
So we got one other thing. This is called a bakora, is what it's called. It's a walking stick, sort of, that they, in their culture, they give it to elders and people like that. And when you see someone with one, you know that they're a wise person who should be listened to, which is, you know, what I'm saying. But their team was very generous and very gracious, and they gave these out as gifts to us who were there. Mine is a giraffe on it, and they said that's because I'm a visionary. The giraffes are able to see long distances over the plains, so it's very good. And then you'll have to pretend like you don't know, but I got Kent a little gift as well. They gave it to him first service.
First service is all wrapped up, and like I couldn't get. I'm standing up here trying to get.
I gave Kent one too.
Yeah, super cool.
It's an elephant, and elephants in their culture. Elephants are extremely important to the environment there because they blaze new trails and paths, and they knock over trees and make new places for rivers and streams to go. So they're leaders who explore and push forward. So I thought that was great for you. So
thanks a lot.
Got you one yourself, so you can hit people with it or
something. Yeah, my kids are already trying to hit me with it.
Yeah. Anyways.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Will you guys give it up for Robbie again? Yeah, that's awesome. And I do want to tell you, it's not over. Like, they're going to have another choosing party for those kids again this week. And so if you weren't here last week or you're like, you know what? I didn't know all that was going on there. You guys can still get in on this. So if you guys will put that slide up, you can just text the word harmony to 56170, and you'll get in on that. We won't have, like today, are you excited? Like today after service, you get to run out and find your kid and see who chose you. Yeah, you're like, stop talking, Kent. We wrap it up. Time to go. We won't do that again next Sunday, but you will get it in an email, and you'll get to see a child who picked your family's picture. So I'd encourage you, like, you can text it, get started today. You can take a picture out there again today. You don't have to wait. So if you didn't do it last week, don't miss it. Get on it. I just wanted to tell you, we're going to sing one more song, and then after that, we have announcements, and then you guys will get to go out and see what your child that chose your family, celebrate with your kids, and just love, like, get excited about what God's doing. But I wanted to tell you, right now, we're going to sing a song, and we're going to have a time of communion where you can go and partake what Jesus offered to you. Because one of the coolest things was you were chosen too. You were chosen by him, and he loves you dearly, and he gave his life. And I think he is just as excited to have a choosing party with you when you come up and you choose him again. And he's like, they chose me. I put it out there and they chose me. This is your choosing party too. So this morning, as we go to partake of communion into worship, I just want you to be excited about this part too. It's all so good. God is so good. Whenever you guys are ready, you can stand up during this next song. If you need to talk to somebody or pray, there'll be a few of us up here you can come and talk to. This is your time.